Please enjoy this ringback tone while your podcast is reached.
This is Raquel and Chelsea, and you're listening to Baroque Bitches. Welcome to Baroque Bitches, your art and art history gossip podcast. I'm Raquel.
I'm Chelsea.
Does your mug say Alex?
Oh, my mom made this for me. It says Alex and Chelsea and Alex and Chelsea and Alex and Chelsea and Alex. Yeah, we've got, she went oh in, she God. Had a personalization phase. Jesus. So I have, good. We have so many things. So if we ever break up, you know, all of this will be at Goodwill. So another Alex and Chelsea couple will be really happy.
Well, I know that it's officially holiday times. Mm. Do you want to know how I know?
How?
I got the Christmas card.
Oh.
Terry's Christmas card.
I haven't even gotten it yet. I haven't checked my mail.
So a little backstory, the Christmas card comes out every year, and I was asking Chelsea, I think when you were dating Alex or engaged even, I was like, so is he going to be on the Christmas card now? And the answer is always no, right? Until you guys got married, I don't think he made it to the Christmas card.
Yeah, yeah. Boyfriends aren't allowed on the Christmas card.
Boyfriends aren't allowed on the Christmas card.
Yeah, so it was just me for a while. Because all of my siblings are in different
just
states.
Be like alone.
Yeah, yeah. All of my siblings are in different states. So we rarely have like a family photo together. But so my mom finds photos, you know, we have to send her photos
throughout the year.
Yeah, make sure you get a good picture for the card. If you're gonna go and get pretty, get a picture for the card.
Well, so. This one, she used the one where you guys are in Hawaii.
Oh yeah, yeah, perfect.
But my favorite year was when you got to wear your Lamb of God shirt.
Yeah, the Lamb of God shirt made an appearance in the Christmas card, which is fine.
It was awesome. I was shocked. I was shooketh when I got that card. Which, by the by, Terry, if you're listening, I was so honored when I started getting on that mailing list and got it in the mail.
That's when you know.
That was a big, big deal
that's
for
when
me.
You know you're part of the Dayton clan.
yep. Terry Dayton. Mm-hmm. Yep. Which, by the way, I have to say, thank you to everybody who has just listened and supported us. We have like a bigger following than we could have thought or anticipated when starting
100%.
This.
100%. We are so glad. So, you guys think we're cool. That's crazy.
Thank you. And please keep listening if you want. We're having the best fucking time.
Dude.
And we hope that you are too. We have listened to you, so we're going to try and keep this like and try to cut it back.
Yeah.
If we can.
Because we know y'all busy. You're busy.
We know you're busy.
Busy running around, fucking doing stuff.
Wah! Fucking doing shit in life and stuff. So how's your week going?
Good. I have all my beverages. I've got my water, my wine, my tea. So all the liquids. Yeah, my week's been fine. It's just been just like teaching a lot, which is fine. I had to teach a kids class.
So Chelsea, and when I met Chelsea, she was like, I hate children. And now you're like, no, kids are cool. They're fine.
Kids are cool.
I don't know if you're just saying that because I have. Yeah, which is totally fine.
Yeah. But, no, kids are officially cool for an hour and a half. And then they can go back.
Yeah, that sounds
right. Yeah. I had, but there was. Girl, this one girl, it's every time with an Annabelle. I have several Annabelles that are something the fuck else. But this girl. And so, I've been learning some new phrases that I didn't know before. Being really mid right now, Miss Chelsea.
The term I like that I hear on Love Island, an insult. You're boring. You're so boring.
So boring. Like,
damn, oh, so that is cold.
Ow.
Like, what a horrible thing to be called. You're boring. You're so boring.
You're boring. You're mid.
It's like my favorite thing. Well, shall we get into it? Are we ready to visualize? Have you ever lost yourself? No, not like that. Not that cute, trite, went to college, had a sip of champagne and danced all night, lost yourself. I mean, have you been fully fucking gone from yourself? Like, taken the fuck over by something just bigger than you? I don't know. It feels like there's this ball inside of me and it's filled with everything I am but shouldn't be. It's like this tiny ball of softness and hope. It's losing against everything else, and then all of a sudden it just bursts out of me and it's no longer soft and wishful, but it's angry and it's vengeful and it's being consumed. It's getting lost and I'm losing myself. I mean, I'm just fucking walking just like it's any other fucking Tuesday down the street. Before I know it, I'm naked in a living room surrounded by wide eyes, Park Avenue cocktails, and bullshit conversations. And I look down, and there's my fucking Johnson staring back at me and back at the whole fucking room, and everyone, including myself, is wondering what the fuck happened. It's not my fault, but it is. I mean, it's me. I'm the one doing the shit, but it's not me, you know? Someday it's gonna fucking win. But what are you supposed to do when you're living in a walking fucking nightmare? So welcome to Jackson Pollock, a walking fucking nightmare.
Yes.
This one gets dark.
The guy of abstract expressionism.
Mr. Abstract Expressionism. So there's a lot of myth surrounding this painter today. Revolutionary, genius. But also like charlatan and a hack, like, you know, I think people go back and forth of what they think of him.
Lots of critics, lots of people that just jizz all over him. And then lots of people that are just like, what the fuck is that?
What the fuck is this? Everyone becomes an art critic when Jackson Pollock's on the docket. Everybody fucking thinks they know what good art and bad art is.
For sure.
Even just like doing like the research for this, I just like listen to jack off dudes be like, you know, he's just like making this shit up and it doesn't mean anything and my kid could do that.
But he didn't.
Like, fuck you, guy. But he didn't, right? He didn't. And I feel like it's almost like a guttural human reaction when people are faced with like things they don't understand or the unknown because they can't like wrap their head around it. It's almost like we're just like, no, fuck that. Like, it doesn't make sense to me and move on instead of just like really trying to access that part of yourself that can like try and understand somebody else or empathize. And in my 20s, I was totally like that. Like with the abstract thing, I was like, no. Fuck that. I know everything. I'm a figure painter. That stuff doesn't matter to me. But I'm glad that I had a teacher change my mind. And I hope that if you're on the like anti-Pollock, anti-abstract art side, that you'll keep an open mind. Just enjoy, like, let your mind be free.
Don't worry about that. It's $10 million. Don't worry about that.
Don't worry about it.
Just, you're not going to buy any of this stuff anyway.
You can't afford it. And I'll try and like later on give a little lesson that I learned on like how to enjoy this stuff. But we got a show to do. Without further ado, let's get into the contextual.
Who the fuck is this guy?
Who is he? Why do we care? What is he doing? How does he feel? Daddy is Leroy McCoy. Isn't that just such like a good name?
Like a folk singer.
Leroy McCoy.
I'm already hearing like an acoustic guitar.
But dad is super sad story. So his mom died when he was like 3 or 4. And his dad decided like he couldn't do it. So he left him with the neighbors.
Oh. Okay. Yeah.
Possibly sold him to the neighbor. Yeah. So there's definitely like some abandonment issues out the gate.
Oh my God, that's hardcore.
Isn't that horrible? Yeah. And this is like rural farm town vibes. So the adopted parents, of course, immediately exercise their right to child labor, and they make Leroy earn his keep. Oh, you're three? Better get a shovel. Better get a hoe. Get to work. Yeah. So,
go milk those cows.
And you might be wondering why Leroy's last name is McCoy, and that's why. So they change his last name to their family name, Pollock. And so Daddy is not, as you can imagine, the most emotionally available, stable sort of guy. And so Mom, Stella McClure, she's the eldest of like a shit ton of fucking kids who she has to raise, of course. And a lot, all this time, like, people are farmers, but her family comes from weavers. So she kind of thinks she's like a little step up. Like, you farmer, how lowly, right?
We're weavers. I'm not outside. Disgusting.
Well, Stella wasn't too far above a farmer. In fact, she gets underneath one. Her and Leroy McCoy, they get pregnant out of wedlock. So when she gets pregnant, she's like sort of shipped off out of town, as you do back in the day. And they do get married, and they go to Cody, Wyoming. And that's where they start like breeding their and have their five kids. And Paul Jackson Pollock is the youngest of five. So he was born January 28th, 1912. So he's an ethereal weirdo Aquarius, just like me. So Pollock was a 12 and a half pound baby.
Ow.
Just ruined his mom's vagina.
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, normally by your fifth kid, they're just like falling out, right? Well, think of like a bag, like the big bag of sugar. That's two of those.
Oh my God.
That's two of those. And more than that, because that's a 5 pound bag of sugar.
Oh my God.
So yeah, big ass baby. And being from Cody, Wyoming comes into play in his career and influence in his work. He's called like the cowboy painter. It has this like wild, wild west vibe, like cowboy vibe. It's where Buffalo Bill is from, you know. But at 11 months old, they move the fuck out of there and they go to Phoenix, Arizona. I know. So it's kind of funny. Like already you're like, it was just a rumor that he's like this cowboy dude. But yeah, so then they moved to Arizona, and this is like the best time in their nuclear family's life. They have this like little farmhouse, super cute. They're raising like dairy cows and animals, and they're doing like off the grid sort of living, which is all you could really fucking do at the time. I mean, electricity wasn't super common or anything like that. Like when we picture this time, think like post-Civil War and pre-Roaring 20s. And the 20s, like, I always picture, like, glam.
Ba, ba, ba.
Da, da, da. Like, flappers and da, 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 and, like, Daisy, you know? And but this was actually mostly super fucking sad times in America.
And, are we talking, I mean, maybe, like, Courage the Cowardly Dog in the middle of nowhere type of?
Kind of that vibe, yeah. Like, so with at this time, like in the early 1900s, it's only within the first few decades prior that the landscape of modern day America is like at its very beginnings. And we're coming off of like displacing and murdering a lot of indigenous Native American and Mexican peoples. Utilities aren't really a thing yet in a lot of houses. It's still like small school vibes, you know, like schoolhouse vibes where everybody's like a different age but in the same grade. The rail system helps to transport goods, and stores like Sears and Bergdorf's start producing like mass goods for people to order.
The catalogs.
Yeah, and there's like magazines that start happening. So America's really like branding, you know, and national identity is sort of forming.
Let's be the business that we want.
Yeah, exactly. And so people can buy like the same shit and same things and have the same sort of like mentalities and likeness. And so of course there's this group that's like, can't we go back to the old ways? And Jackson's dad is like really one of those guys. Like he's like vibing being in Arizona in this little farmhouse with no electricity. You go to an outhouse. Like this is his dream and he's feeling it. But mom's like, listen, I come from a classy, classy Weaver family.
I'm a Weaver, so I want to order things out of the Sears catalog.
Yeah, exactly.
I kind of feel her though a little bit. Like, I mean, it kind of sucks that we all became such hardcore consumers, but also like
Jeff Bezos, you devil, like you are a devil man. Yeah. Why can't I quit you?
Can't.
It's so hard.
I've been doing better. I've been doing a little better with my Amazon edition.
I have to.
Like, nope. Do I need it right now? No, I do not need it. I want it. I don't need it.
So she's like, I want more. I want more for me. I want more for my boys. I want more for our family. But she moves the family to Chico. Well, this kind of just creates like a huge fucking problem in their family because when they get there, Leroy doesn't like the type of farming that's there and like
citrus.
I guess. Citrus. And he's like, I don't fucking know how to grow oranges. Like,
I don't know oranges.
He's not into it. And he just gets the fuck out. He's like, I'm going to go build some roads. She moves the family following him around, and they move 9 times by the time Jackson is 16. So lots of moving. So Jackson as a kid, he's called like super needy, which I hate because kids aren't needy. Like, I mean, duh, kids are needy. Like they need things, right? But yeah, it makes him...
They don't know how to fend for themselves.
But like kids aren't a burden. Like you choose to have them. So newsflash, like making them feel like a burden in their youth will carry over into adulthood.
Yeah, they're not going to forget about that.
No. So Jackson at a young age though, he has like a difficulty with emotional regulation. And also he's the 5th kid. So I'm sure Stella's like, you know...
Over
it's a lot. You're supposed to raise yourself at this point. Yeah. Like, go on. But,
I'm not doing this again.
And he definitely probably needed some, like, emotional guidance on how to deal with being an emotional kid. So, of course, he winds up being, like, a reclusive, angry weirdo, which he's described as not being able to talk, really. Like, he doesn't have... He doesn't really have an ability to communicate with words. And when he does, it's confusing. He's often frustrated because he just can't fucking get his words out. You can, I mean, you know, some people are already kind of just like have a predisposition to need more help. And when they don't get it, it just causes chaos. And so you can already see that like the rejection by his dad from like leaving has got to be brutal. And then mom is like worried about dad leaving, trying to chase after him, and he's still not coming home. I mean, that's just got to be so fucked up, right?
Yeah.
So Stella finally gives up on following dad around and they go to Los Angeles. Pollock is definitely a weird, pent-up anger, quiet, mysterious sort of teen. He does things. Look up self-portrait by Jackson Pollock. This is like the vibe. It's really dark.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So. Oh, he's a
teenager.
Yeah, teenage angst is coming out.
Yeah.
This is really like the earliest work that we can see because he has a hard time communicating. He uses alcohol. This is like when we start seeing alcohol use to loosen up and try and like communicate with people, which is super common. I mean, you know, you're going on a first date. You take a little drink before you go. Like, I get it. Like, with courage.
Totally.
Yeah.
Being normal at a party.
Yeah, but then it has like an opposite effect, you know? Like it like fucks him up instead of helps him out. And it's just like, instead he's probably like, I just picture the guy at the party like standing in the corner being really shy and like kind of looking like mad and angry and confused. And he just keeps drinking.
Why the fuck am I here?
Yeah, and then he gets to the point where he's like, oh, fuck. And then he like beats somebody up or like, you know, grabs somebody's butt or like... like that kind of guy. So he has a quote from this time from a letter to his brother. And it says, people have always frightened and bored me. Consequently, I have been within my own shell and have not accomplished anything materially.
Oh.
I know. Super sad, right?
Yeah.
Sounds like so dark.
Angsty.
Jackson starts making his own moonshine and going drunk to high school. Hell yeah.
I did make a concoction. I did the vodka in the Gatorade bottle thing.
Oh, yeah. I totally did that.
Oh, yeah. That's when... Oh, no. I'm just getting my electrolytes. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I did that once or twice. So he starts making his own moonshine, and he's drunk at high school, so inevitably he punches a teacher in the face and gets kicked out.
Dude.
Yeah, and so he shifts gears and he goes to art school.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense. So in art school, he goes through this, like, little anti-establishment phase. He gets into, like, a weird religion. He starts acting out all the time. And the family knows, like, something's up with him. Like, they are very aware that he's drinking and that it's not normal and that his anger outbursts are a problem. But they don't really know what to do. Like, mental health conversations, I don't think, are really a thing at this point. Mm. And the other thing is, he fucking sucks, apparently. Like, he's, like, really... He's described as being, like, super bad at art. Like, no natural talent. like, and I'm not... It's, like, across many different articles. It's just, like, he's not good. He's like,
very good. Yeah.
So he's competitive, and he wants to be good. And so this leads into being just so frustrated. So
it just probably makes him fucking angrier.
Yeah.
Like, finally, I'm in a place with a bunch of weirdos, and I can't even do their fucking thing.
I can't even do their thing. I know. And his older brother, Charles, like, his mom encourages him to go to art school. So he's out in New York. And this is kind of what influences him to start being an artist and go to art school, too. So in 1930, his mom's like, dude, GTFO. So he gets out. And goes and moves in with his brother in New York. And so this is where...
New York. The New York.
So, So this is where he starts going to the Art Students League, where his brother went. And his brother, they're studying under this guy, Thomas Hart Benton, who... This guy, Thomas Hart Benton, he's sort of like a surrogate father to Pollock. He went to study with him and quickly becomes his favorites. And Thomas Hart Benton, his works are regionalism. So if you don't know what regionalism is, it can be like paintings, prints, etc., like all depicting realistic scenes of American farm life.
It's like twirly Americana.
I put horses. It's really wobbly.
Wobbly. It is wobbly, like farmland.
So he does like large scale paintings and murals. It's all about American farm life and Benton's heavily influenced by Diego Rivera. So it's like Diego Rivera goes west. I think Diego Rivera as a white American male. It's like farm life, the working man, social issues, it's all there.
I like that one. There's like a Instagram something where it's like, white people talk all night. Where you get carne from the grocery store. Taco shells from the grocery store. It's like that.
Yeah, it's exactly like that. This is very much the like fucking American ripoff of Diego Rivera. but Jackson like literally loves this guy. He integrates into the family, and there's very much this like theme of, I don't have like my parents nearby, so I need something to cling on to, like a parent sort of deal. And Thomas Hart Benton's very much like a father figure to him, and his wife Rita Benton sort of like a mom figure, but kind of like weird. So she's like super hot. And she's known to be this like flirty but warm, hot mother type figure. So, and Jackson being the like pent up aggressive, like not doesn't understand his feelings, like doesn't know how to interpret this. It must have been so confusing for him because he's like at this point witnessing relationships from the outside in. Like he doesn't feel like he can access and really develop or nurture a relationship. He just doesn't really understand how. And him and Thomas Hart Benton are like drinking buddies. They just like to love to get fucked up. And so, you know, like, misery loves company. There's drinking all the time. And he meets his wife and he's like, I don't know, I think I love you. And she's like, no, 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 no. I was just being nice to you, you know?
I'm just nice.
I'm just being nice.
I don't want you in me.
And there's this thought that, like, he probably was like, how dare she do this to me? Like, it's her fault, you know? Like,
oh, yeah. I feel like we've all been there. I'm like, I was kind of just being nice to you. Now, okay, now you're mad.
Now you're mad. It's like being catcalled, like, hey, hottie. And then you're like, no thanks. And they're like, bitch, you know?
Fuck you, bitch. Fuck you, bitch.
You're fucking ugly anyway.
I'm like, fat. Well, if I'm so ugly, then stop fucking yelling at me.
Stop yelling at me. Leave me alone.
Leave my ugly ass alone then.
We do not like being catcalled.
Just so y'all know.
So y'all know. So yeah, he like gets himself seated in their family. He's babysitting the kids. He's going to the Hamptons with them. He's, you know, like really a part of their family. So Thomas Hart Benton leaves New York to teach in Kansas, and Jackson is furious because it obviously will trudge up all these like abandonment issues that he already had. So there's definitely
daddy leaving again.
Yeah, it sucks. Yeah. I mean, so when he's like quoted talking about Thomas Hart Benton, he says he gave me something to rebel against. So it's almost like this like fuck him sort of deal. And also he taught me how to drink the fifth of whiskey a day. So
okay, so now he's got an excuse to be a drunk asshole.
I know, right? So at this point, his work is like headed towards being abstract, and you know, he likes to say he's not influenced by him, obviously, but look up Going West by Jackson Pollock and tell me that shit is not influenced by Thomas Hart Benton. So it's a wobbly ass painting, and it depicts a pioneer family traveling in the middle of the night with like covered wagons and animals pulling the covered wagons. And it's whimsical, it's dark, whirly. And it's dramatic, and it's whirly,
yeah,
and there's no way you can look at it and deny an influence of Thomas Hart Benton.
Oh, totally.
After he leaves, he sort of meets his art crew. From 1938 to 1942, he worked for this thing called the WPA Federal Art Project, so it's like exactly how it sounds, federally funded art project. And the work at this point is still figurative, but he's definitely found like a style that works for him. And he meets a lot of people and he integrates into the bohemian world. But he's not like a friend amongst these people, not really. He's sort of like the quiet, inarticulate, very drunk man in the corner. But he still seems, yeah, exactly. Here's Pollock. There he is. But here is where he would have met like Willem de Kooning, Robert Motherwell, Franz Kline, some other abstract expressionist painters.
Abstract expressionist people.
Yeah. And so de Kooning versus Pollock. De Kooning was sort of like a frenemy. De Kooning's like very charming, charismatic sort of dude. They drink together a lot. They have a lot of instances of like playfully criticizing each other. But Jackson's always super jelly of him because de Kooning, by way of comparison to Jack, is like hot, charismatic dude. Kind of like a Michelangelo versus like Da Vinci sort of deal, you know?
Totally. Like that is like, them reincarnated for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Because de Kooning is hot. And he gets the ladies. And I feel like he was always a little bit like, okay, like, I like your work. But, like, I mean, I can be in society. and de Kooning's not even from there.
Right.
So, yeah. And I read about de Kooning before. And they do definitely have, like, a frenemy type of situation. They have to be together in a way, but he's always like, okay, here's Jackson at the fucking bar again, like, we're gonna fight.
I mean, Jackson's not like an easy person to get along with. You know, I feel for him and his struggles, but it's kind of like the Kanye vibe of like, does having a mental health issue excuse you just being a total fucking asshole? Like, I don't think so.
No.
And when I was saying he has a drinking problem, I don't mean it's like just getting drunk and he couldn't like function because he's hungover. I mean, it was like a fucking problem.
Mm. When it affects like everyone around you.
Yeah. Like he's like the world's worst kind of drunk. Like he gets violent. He breaks people's furniture. He gets into knife fights. He's like the kind of dude that like pees on your kitchen table sort of drunk.
Yeah.
Like there's literally zero self-control. And on top of that, it's said that he gets drunk, like, really easily, and that people like to get him drunk as, like, a show pony sort of deal.
Right. Of, look what I can make him do. Now he's going to, like, be our entertainment tonight.
Exactly.
He's
going to
pee somewhere.
His family knows that his problem is beyond the drinking. I mean, they know something else is inherently wrong with him, and we know people don't like drinking because of like prohibition and all that, but they're still not the term alcoholic. Not really.
Right.
So
yeah,
he went through a lot. So he went through a lot of therapists in his life. His family actually sent him to therapy.
Oh.
And this is the type.
Are we still in like lobotomy era?
I mean, I'm sure because that sort of stuff happened like well and past his lifetime. But
yeah, that came up in like the 50s and
but
60s.
But he never had a lobotomy. I mean, he was institutionalized at one point. He's been diagnosed during and after his lifetime with schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, autism, dyslexia, alcoholism, and depression.
Oh,
so
wow.
A lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the work. So during his time at the WPA and meeting all these other cool cats, his work definitely turns into abstract expressionism. So those of you who don't know what abstract expressionism, what is it? We still don't know. No.
I don't know.
So in our Peggy Googs episode, we learn about surrealism and Dadaism and the abstract art beginning. Well, as we know, with World War II, all these artists from Europe come to New York and they start like intermingling with the U.S. crew. And abstract expressionism is born out of that. It's an American art movement, and it was influenced by those other movements. It's a broad term because the art is widely varied within the crew, but it's divvied up into action painting and color field painting. And Jackson Pollock is an action painter. So I'll talk about that. Action painting is literally as it sounds, painting where the action of how it was made is evident, characterized by movement. There's like hella gestural brushstrokes, lots of different types of mediums and tools being used to create the work. So look up Bird by Jackson Pollock. So the image is an abstracted profile of birds on either side. Oh. It looks almost like a Rorschach shock test.
Yeah,
you know,
it does.
But it's like hella phallic. Like it looks like a dick, kind of.
It could be balls.
It could be balls. And the image is on either side with like an eye on top of the painting.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like very much the time like, oh, it's a bird. You're like, that doesn't look like a fucking bird.
Yeah.
Like, that's really abstract expressionism in a nut, like, shell.
You're going to find some things in there that might look, like, figurative. What is that when you see faces in things? Like, what's that? It's like a human trait that we see. We always, like, see faces in things, like, no matter what, because we can recognize a human face so hard.
I don't know.
I forget what it's called, but it's, like, a thing that we do, like, subconsciously find faces.
I don't know.
Like, there's this one. I think I was watching, or no, I was following this Instagram account where it's, like, faces in the wood grain, and then they, like, put little voices to it. It's hella funny, because
God, I'd love the internet.
I have a face in my bathroom door, and I fucking talk to it when I'm pooping. It's just what we do, I guess.
Oh my God, that is so funny. Yeah, you know what? I see faces like my there's windows on either side of my fireplace, and then the fireplace looks like a mouth, and the windows look like eyes. Yeah.
Yeah, just so an angry
face. I see what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah, we always see faces and stuff. It's some kind of thing. All the psychology majors and stuff are like, what's this to my face?
You don't know what anything is.
sorry.
Burn them.
Burn. Repent.
But this is kind of an idea of like what abstract expressionism is and where he's at in this point. So in 1936, he meets Lee Krasner. She's actually the best fucking thing that, like, could ever happen to him. But so this, when she meets him this time, they're at a party and she's apparently, like, dancing with this dude. And then all of a sudden feels like Pollock come up and start dancing with her. And so he's apparently, like, really drunk and weird and horny and just, like, starts dry humping her and, like, grabbing her and, like, then eventually whispers in her ear, like, asking her to go fuck or something. And she abruptly slaps him in the face. And apparently this was, like, how Jackson approached women a lot in his life. Like, he wasn't exactly respectful because he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know how to act. And so he gets wasted and he fucks it up. But 5 years later, they're in a show together. And that prompts Lee to go see his works in person at his apartment.
Come and see my paintings.
And so this to me isn't really a story of, like, love, but more of her getting, like, artmatized. So we talked about, like, pussyatized and dickmatized in the last episode. This feels more like she's like, oh my God, so much talent. Oh my God, so misunderstood. I will save you. I will help you. We will conquer the art world together.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because we all have that mentality.
And listen, she deserves a pod. Like, if you don't know, Lee Krasner was an artist herself. I'm sure there's a lot to unpack there too.
We should do Lee Krasner and Elaine de Kooning versus their dudes.
Yeah, we totally should.
Yeah, for sure.
We should, for sure.
Fucking tea.
Yeah. But she falls in love with Jackson, and she's not, like, the most conventionally hot babe, but she's a babe nonetheless. She's determined and, like, hardcore about painting. Like, she fucking loves painting, and she's educated, and she's charismatic, and she's basically Jackson's biggest fucking fan. For all of Jackson's shortcomings, and we know there are many, she overlooks them and decides to cling on tight. She teaches him how to elevate his work and how to sort of, like, express himself in a more accessible and, like, high art kind of way. Mm-hmm. And she also is constantly promoting him and getting him connected with others. So she, like, figures
basically
out
how to make it bigger.
Yeah, right.
Make it bigger!
But she, like, figures out how to, like, access a part of him and really, like, communicate with him. She figures out this weird way to get into that brain of his.
And in ignores a way that, all of the red flags.
As you do. As you do. You know, we've done it. I've done it. Oh, man. Oh,
we all do it.
Did I do that? So she gets him a meeting with Peggy Guggenheim.
The Googs.
So Peg sees the first painting in the show, and she's like, no, I'm not into it. But then Marcel Duchamp tells her she likes it.
Just so you know.
So she immediately, he's like, no, look again. And she's like, oh, okay, yeah, you're the best painter ever. Let's immediately give you a show and a year contract and commissions this big-ass mural that we talked about in the Peggy Guggenheim episode, but I'll talk about it again. So here's the gist. She's like, I'm going to commission you to make this huge fucking painting. I think it's like 8 feet by 20 feet for the entryway in her apartment building. And you have X amount of time to make it. And Pollock, like, can't make it. And then in one night, he makes the fucking thing. And it's huge. And it's amazing. And it's untitled mural at Iowa State. Mm. And this is where you can really see that, like, Western influence come into play. There, it looks like horses in a stampede. But it's very highly abstract. The lines are very bold and blunt. It's swirling. There's
it's also
movement.
Loopy. Yeah, but
it's very
and I
loopy.
Think there's some vaginas and penises, but that's just my non-representation. Yeah, it looks like an orgy. That's where we know where my head is. Yeah.
Well, so he makes it and then apparently has a hell of a time getting it into Peggy Guggenheim's entryway, and she had at this point hidden all the bottles in her apartment from him, and he finds them and digs them out, gets wasted. They finally hang the thing, and then he stumbles drunk into a party that her roommate is having, and he's naked. We love a naked drunk man. No, we don't. No, we don't. No, no, no. I was just kidding. Please don't. No, no, no. We don't like that. Unless it's like Frank the Tank from Old School. I did like that. When Will Ferrell, we're going streaking.
Oh, yeah. Through the park, which is a gymnasium. Then it's like, okay, go for it.
So let's talk about She-Wolf. So She-Wolf is another painting that he does at the time. It's heavy-handed with thick black and white lines that are an abstractive wolf. It's dark imagery, and there's patches and unintelligible markings all across the image. It kind of looks like hieroglyphics and like cave paintings.
It looks like the Romulus wolf. Like the Rome.
Yeah, that's actually like people think it's inspired by that. About this painting, he says, any attempt on my part to say something about it, to attempt an explanation of the inexplicable, could only destroy it.
I think
so. This like gives.
I think that it's like whenever somebody asks any artist what their work means, you're like, I don't know, man. Fuck, do you want to read my artist statement? Because I didn't write that either.
I think some artists are very pointed about what it means and literal. And he's like not literal.
It's a
bunch
of swirly guys. And I don't fucking know what I mean. What are you talking about?
And I think if we're like leaning into this like kind of autism, you know, part, sometimes autistic people think in patterns that are different from language. Like it's more imagery or sound or light. Like, you know, that's can be like considered their first language of how their thought process goes. And we know he's not good at communicating with words, but he's very good at communicating with images, with painting. And so it's like, just let it fucking be what it is. There's very much like people are always trying to figure it out, and he's like, quit trying to fucking make me talk about this. Like, I don't want to talk.
I always say too, just look at it. Ask me about like what my work is about. It's like, if I knew, I would write it down. I don't know. I wanted to make a thing.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I just wanted to make a thing. So like most of his work looks like this. It's not the iconic drippy droppies we know and love / hate today. So he's still a fucking mess at this point. With Peggy Guggenheim, they did not like each other. She did not. It's more like they were just like using each other, really. She saw that he was a genius and he saw that she was a paycheck. So Lee is like watching Jackson spiral more and more, and she convinces Peggy to lend them money so that she can move him out of New York City and move to the Hamptons. So they move into this like cute little farm, like clapboard farmhouse. And this is probably like the second best part of his life. So this house is like tiny. It doesn't have running water, electricity. And the whole first year, instead of making art, they work on just getting it like livable. Mm. And she somehow manages to keep him sober during this time. And we get to see and hear about this really special time in their life through her.
Okay.
He was a really good baker.
Yeah, he's like keeping himself busy.
He would bake apple pies and breads and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, we just see that like soft part of him, like he really is, and his good intentions, and like apparently makes the best spaghetti sauce. They garden together.
Oh, I want to do
all
that.
They have a pet. I know. They have a pet crow named Caw Caw. Isn't that cute, Caw Caw?
Crows are supposed to be super smart.
Yeah. No. And I
remember you.
Right. And so this is where. In this location and setting where he starts making the drips. So these paintings are iconic. I mean, obviously, we're still talking about them today. They're repetitive in nature, chaotic, but intentional. And they're usually done in like house paint or other less expensive materials, feeding into like that lack of refinement that we know about him and we love about him. If you look up Autumn Rhythm, This is the painting that made me fall in love with Jackson Pollock. It's at the Met in New York. Chelsea, I think you were there when I saw it. Yeah, that was our Renaissance. Where we like fell in love with each other. Like,
wait, are we on the exact same page? Should we ditch these hoes and get fucking wasted?
Every fucking second. I don't think we slept all but 3 hours that entire trip.
Definitely. At the end of it, I was definitely seeing some like Jackson Pollocks in my
I couldn't feel my freaking out. Oh my god. It was so much fun. That was a crazy trip. But I remember seeing this painting and walking up to it and just crying. Not like sobbing, but tearing up. I mean, I cry at the Nationwide commercial, so it's not hard to make me cry.
These holiday commercials coming up is just
I just have so many emotions. Yeah.
Whenever the army guy comes home, it's like, get me right now.
We don't even know any army people. That must be such an emotional time for them.
I surprised his mom on Christmas. Stop, Folgers. Get out of here. You got me. I'll buy your stupid gross coffee.
I'm dying.
But yeah, every time. And then it's just from like the fucking 90s. And I still still put it on because they know that there's bitches like me out there tearing up.
Those commercials are great. I agree. Totally. I agree wholeheartedly. Oh my God. But they're not as good as Jackson Pollock's paintings.
Yes.
So people love to rag on these paintings. He's called accidental and chaotic, which he fucking hates. He's always questioning himself when he's making these, even in sobriety, and looking to Lee to comfort him and to reassure him. So he's like incredibly insecure. Okay. So I think that's
imposter syndrome.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. And he has this famous line that he uses. So, I don't use the accident because I deny the accident. Okay. So, there's definitely, he wants to be taken seriously. He's an intentional painter. Mm-hmm. And everyone's always trying to give them meaning. But I feel like you shouldn't. You should just try to enjoy them because that's what he would have wanted. So, he starts naming them numbers instead of like actual words to get and be like, get the fuck off it. Like, don't worry about the title. Just look at it. And, like, my biggest suggestion to you is to empty your mind of everything you think you should be doing when you're looking at these paintings and just live in the moment. Like, don't try to explain them. You wouldn't try to explain, like, a tree and you'd just be like, oh, that tree's beautiful.
Yeah.
Just look at them and just experience them and let yourself feel something.
I definitely, like, have this conversation a lot with some of my students about, like, okay, but what's the deal with, like, abstract art? I don't get it. And it's like, it's not really something to get. It's just, or a lot of people think that they're not educated enough. Or they're ignorant about art, so they're just like, oh, I'm not smart enough. And it's like, actually, it's the opposite. You want to empty your mind. There was one, the school that I work for, the founder of the school has a bunch of lectures that we all have to listen to. And he's great. But he fucking hates abstract expressionism. And because I think he's from that time. So, and he's a representational painter. So,
so he's probably like, he was probably like looking at other people do it. And he's thinking like, fuck you.
No, he was really, at that time, it's like fine art is non-representational. So if you are doing representational paintings, you're an illustrator. And you're not a fine artist. So, right. So he fucking hated that. He's like, I'm not a fucking illustrator. I'm not going to do ads. I want to make beautiful paintings like fucking Titian and stuff. And they're like, sorry, you're going to have to do ads. So he hates abstract expression, I think, because of like growing up during that time in New York,
that I put him in.
During this Pollock time. And there was some experiment during this time. Basically, there was a big art competition where all these abstract expressionists applied their work. And there was one piece of work that was made by a monkey. And that work they didn't know it was made by a monkey. So, and they chose that work to be the winner of the competition. And basically, the guy that put him in, you guys are all idiots. It's a fucking monkey. And it's like, well, that kind of makes sense on why this one won, because it's so instinctual that it's not even to the point of,
it's so removed from what we think something should be conventionally,
because it's literally a different species making it, and that it's there's no human bias because it's not made even by a human, so it's all just
right.
He's just intentionally putting down paint on a canvas as you would if you give a monkey a paintbrush. And then it's pure action of like an animal making gestures. Just like I think a lot of these abstract expressionists were trying to do in their action paintings of, I want to create a movement, and the paint being the actual art, not the subject
matter
is the movement of the paint.
Right.
I think
right.
the monkey painting one because it was so like, oh, this is so pure, this is so unbiased, this is natural. And it's like, yeah, it's literally fucking natural because it's it's a monkey from the jungle fucking making
it. Right.
So I think he, you know, of course my founder's like, that's so stupid. And it's like, and And a lot of times my students will be like, I don't really know how to look at these. And it's like, just look at them and feel something.
Just
you don't
look
have
at
to
it.
Get it.
Let yourself feel something. You don't have to get it. It's not a puzzle you have to solve.
They try to hold on to anything. And the only thing they can hold on to is how fucking much it is.
We have to remember this hadn't been done before. And it's hard to think about something that's so like widely spread and influential now. But then this would have been revolutionary. Nobody had gone there. So, that's why it's so important. That's why it's so expensive. Because now we see a million fucking drippy droppies reproduced and on walls that aren't by Jackson Pollock. That influence is why these paintings are important. Because they are the first of their kind.
And they thought Monet was, weird,
all
too.
These people. Yeah.
You know, and they thought Monet was ugly. And now it's like, beautiful water lilies. And I'm like, man, if you were from that time,
it's just like,
you would have
like
thought
when,
that
with
this was
any,
bullshit.
With any trend, you know, like dime pieces, I fucking hated them. And now I'm like, should I get dime pieces? Like,
what is a dime
you know,
piece?
Anything. Dime pieces is where you dye the two pieces on the front of your hair blonde.
Yeah. I've seen that.
Yeah.
You'd look like so cute. Thing.
Right? Or like, it. You know, it's like, you know, the lob came back. It's all these things that were like, ugh, at first. And then we're like, oh, okay, I get it. Everybody's doing it now. I like
nice.
It. So it's literally a trend. And so, you know, I think American consumerism helps him out for sure. And also the magazines help him out. He's in an article in Life magazine after these come out that's called Jackson Pollock, Is He the Greatest American Painter of All Time of Our Time?
Well, wasn't the whole like the American government funding this whole shit anyway because
so
of communism?
That's a rumor, and we're gonna get into the rumor.
Okay,
I'm gonna get right there. So,
cool.
So let's see. So he spends a few years actively painting these and is sober the entire time. He even starts doing a documentary style film with this guy who's like filming him doing action painting, so you can see what it looks like. This is where we get like insight into the style painting and how meditative and controlled he is. And he looks like he's like in a trance when he's making these. He's walking in and out of the painting. He's stepping on them. There's like, you know, cigarette ash on them and trash and stuff.
Yeah.
He puts the painting on the floor. I forgot to mention that. So he's not painting on the wall. He's painting on the floor. It's not like he's drunk and crazy like everybody thinks. Like, oh, Jackson Pollock, the drunk splatter painter. No, he's like sober. And he actually only really makes work in his lifetime when he is sober. So the other times he's really not productive at all. So let me get into the rumors. After he's painting for this film, he goes inside and opens up a bottle of whiskey and says, "This is the first drink I've had in 2 years," and takes a huge fucking drink, and then hands the documentary filmmaker a drink and pours himself another, and just shit hits the fan right a fucking way. Because as we know, he gets drunk super duper fast. Lee Pollock had been making this like ginormous dinner and he just flips the fucking dinner table over.
Yeah.
Party's over.
Oh, you know, with whiskey too. Like, and a nice glass of Cabernet.
Dude, that was the drink. That was the man drink at the time, like whiskey and beers. And so this is just like starts his spiral. You know, he's back on it. Mm-hmm. He's back into the spiral. So, you know, he's getting drunk all the time. Lee Pollock cannot get a hold of him. And this is when he starts an affair. And Lee is just like, I'm fucking done. I can't do this anymore. And takes off. So let's see. The rumor has it that he might be gay. So gay, straight. Maybe probably gay or asexual. He has this roommate, Peter Bussa, and he said that Pollock had divulged being gay to him and that it was very difficult for him. And two close friends of Lee Krasner admit that Lee thought he was gay. And they divulged that Lee Krasner was intimate with him only in their first year of marriage. And then after that, no longer. One of his girlfriends, Rose Mailer, said they never had sex. One of his other girlfriends, Bert Pacifico, prior to Lee, said they never had sex. And Ruth Kligman, the one he had an affair with, said they never had sex. So lots of not sex happening. Lots of no sex happening. And then also, like, you know, admitting to the roommate that he was gay. And then the worst part of it. So when he's studying under Thomas Hart Benton, he goes on a trip with his friend Manuel Toljan back to the West and decides he's going to hop on a train by himself and meet Manuel in the West. And trains at the time were like not used for transport. Like, that's not the type of train that he's hopping on. He's using like a goods one to hop on board. And hobos were like constantly jumping on these. It would have been a really rough environment and not like a kind scary. You can hop on, hop off sort of deal. You're trapped on the train going 60 miles an hour for days at a time sort of deal. So, you know, he's stuck with these very, I can only picture like the lowest of low life, like almost like, I don't know, just very dirty.
Lawless.
And so rumor has it that he was like repetitively raped
in these
boxcars. Yeah. And so, so not good. And when he arrives in the West, he had this like beautiful long blonde hair before and it's cut off down to the nib and gone. He's just like beat the fuck up. But when Manuel's like, the fuck happened? Are you okay? He's like, oh yeah, I'm went great. He's like, no problem. Of course, like you do.
Stuff probably builds up. Yeah. And he probably had like just weird stuff with sex in general, like gay or straight is going to be horrific.
I mean, just imagine. Right.
Would take a lot of therapy to get back to a somewhat normal sex situation. Yeah.
Like a healthy relationship with sex after you're raped. Yeah. I don't think like gay or straight doesn't matter. Like coming back to a healthy relationship with sex after that
just avoid
is not going to be very possible. Yeah. Like I would avoid it too. I mean, come on, right? Like Jesus. So yeah, we can definitely see that influencing his relationship with people too. I mean, it's like, God, if he didn't have a chance at having a normal relationship before, he really certainly after that did not have a chance, right? So with the drip paintings, it is rumored that they were heavily influenced by when he would go work with his dad on the road builders, which I think also that would have been kind of a lowly,
lawless environment too. With some of those dudes.
Totally. Yeah. Well, it's thought that, and he said that the drips are influenced by seeing his dad pee on rocks.
Okay.
Like the drops from the pee on the rocks. Oh. So...
All
right. Yeah. So, I mean, that work has been described as being, like, ejaculatory, yeah, no, totally. Which I thought which was very, like, jizz. You know, okay, we're making up words, but I like it. Like, whatever. Ejaculatory.
You know what? I can only describe my work as ejaculatory. I love that.
But, yeah, so talking about the government thing. So was reading that, like, you know, at the time in America in the 50s, communism was like, ah,
the Red Scare.
Communism.
Yeah. The I Red remember Scare. That in so, school for sure. There was like a whole yeah. fucking semester on the Red Scare.
Right. And the government just fucking shits all over Jackson. Like, they love Jackson mm-hmm. Pollock so much because the work is so uninhibited from what communist countries at the time are like trying to impose the regulations on what you can and cannot do. Yeah. And his work is just like, fuck everything that's come before.
Look how
it's unprecedented.
Free I am.
Look how free I am, which is very much the reputation that they're wanting to put yeah. off. So that's where that comes mm-hmm. from. Like, they're very much, even though, you know, they actually didn't like the
it.
Work,
yeah.
like the government. Yeah, they don't get it, but they don't care. They use it to their advantage to promote America as a free country where people can do whatever the fuck yeah. they want sort of deal. So art legacy. So in 2016, Pollock's painting titled Number 17A was reported to have fetched $200 million in private purchase. In 2006, a documentary called Who the Fuck is Jackson Pollock was made concerning Terry Horton, a truck driver who bought an abstract painting for $5 at a thrift store in California in 1992.
Oh, I've heard about this. She's like, what are you talking about?
She's like, what the fuck? Who the fuck's Jackson Pollock? And her neighbor's like, no, dude, this is like worth a lot dude. Of money. And she gets offered $2 million for this painting and turns it down because
yeah.
she's convinced
she
that it's worth
more. Yeah.
So the Pollock-Krasner Authentication Board was created by the Pollock-Krasner Foundation in 1990 to evaluate newly found works for an upcoming to supplement a 1978 catalog. So they open up and they're like, come on, everybody submit your works and we'll find out if they're Pollock's or not. And in 1996, they close it because they got too many fucking entries.
I mean, yeah.
And they're like, please stop sending us stuff. We don't care anymore. We have enough of mm-hmm. them. So people try and copy this work all the time and try and say that it's an original Pollock to try and tap into the $200 million sort of crew.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Well, yeah, you know, I went to my neighbor across the street. He did our leaves last week for us without Aww. Us asking. We have a shit ton of leaves because it's fall.
Ohio.
Well, I walk into his entryway to thank him. I brought him cookies.
Oh, yeah.
Me and Diego baked him cookies and brought him over. And I walk in and I was laughing because there's like a 4x6 painting of drops. Mm. And I was like, oh, like, you know, I'm studying for my podcast on Jackson Pollock. He's like, oh, yeah, I did this with my grandkids.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
I was like, that's awesome. I got to do one with my son, yeah. too. It's so tote. But, I mean, you know, that's influence right there, right?
Yeah.
So anyways, after all this turmoil and him just getting, you know, off the wagon again, Lee Pollock's like, fuck it. I've had it. I can't deal with this anymore. I'm out of here. She goes to Europe to visit Peggy Guggenheim. And when she's there, Pollock, at the age of 44, in a drunken stupor, gets into a car with his girlfriend, Ruth Kligman, and her friend, Edith Metzger, and effectively kills himself and Edith Metzger. Mm. He was thrown 50 feet into the air and into a birch tree and died immediately. Mm. And Ruth Kligman miraculously fucking survives this accident. I don't know how, but, you know, there's the rumor is that he unalived himself intentionally. Poor guy.
Yeah,
so
sucks that he took,
look up his last
Edith
two.
Too.
Ugh,
like,
I know.
Okay, just do it yourself.
She's
or...
like, oh yeah, go with you, Ruth. Go meet your hot artist boyfriend. Yeah. And then just fucking, ugh, it's horrible.
Yeah.
So if you have a chance, go see the movie Pollock with Ed Harris. Ed Harris is like a hot version
yeah.
of Jackson Pollock. It's a great movie, and I think it really demonstrates the just chaos of his life and the sadness of his life. 1955, he makes Scent in Search, and these are his last two paintings. And People say that he, like, after this, his fame has died off. Like, people aren't interested in him anymore. He's too hard to work with, you know?
Yeah.
Like, being, like, a drunk lion. Yeah. Like, he's just a lot. So, people don't really want anything to do with him. But these paintings, I think they're awesome. I really, 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 really quite scary when you know what he's going through.
Totes. Oh, Jackson Pollock.
But yeah, Jackson Pollock. I mean, what a life. What a guy.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, but without all the trauma, we don't get all the art. So.
That's the thing. I feel like that's a common theme throughout most of our topics is like,
yeah.
All right, let's get to the fucked up shit.
Let's
and
get
then
to the fucked up
we'll
shit.
Have some really cool art. It's just one of those.
I know. Yeah. And I mean, you know, there's rumors on this one that we could keep going, but that's the gist.
The tea.
That's why he's in. That's the tea.
Well, who can we compare him to?
I had a hard time with this one because I feel like nobody is just like on display super wasted anymore.
Mm.
But I was thinking like either like Mariah Carey meets Shia LaBeouf.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So Mariah Carey, also diagnosed bipolar, has like an amazing heyday, kind of drips off, right?
Yeah.
Shia LaBeouf definitely has childhood trauma, comes from poverty, and has had like on display his mental illness and like detachment from reality. Like he's abusive to women sort of deal.
Well, for the Mariah.
Drug abuse problems.
For the Mariah one, I was there. I remember watching TRL and she was there with a t-shirt on. And I remember when I was like, I don't know, 11 or something. And I remember being like, is she okay? I don't think
so. Yeah, no,
so.
She was not okay.
And then
she's
God,
not
who
okay.
Was the freaking host? Oh my God, so many. Carson Daly. Yes, so many millennials are screaming.
Yeah, I remember her being on Cribs.
Oh, the with the
and
bubble
she,
bath.
Like,
she got
yeah, she
tub.
Gets into the bubble bath and tries to do the Marilyn Monroe thing,
no.
But it's just kind of sad and weird.
Baby.
And then also with her like trying to sing again, and it wasn't good.
Okay.
And there's definitely some like alcohol abuse things happening. And then Mariah, listen, we love you.
Oh my gosh,
and
it's
we
Christmas.
Hope that you're okay.
Hello, she's coming out to feed.
Hello.
This is her time.
She's amazing. Listen, nobody will ever iconically wear a white bikini like you did in the, on the yacht. You
yes.
literally started people yacht dreaming, okay? Like, if Jackson Pollock has drippy, droppy paintings, you have yacht life.
Yes. Yeah, she's so iconic.
And all I want for Christmas is you, and she's iconic.
Oh, my God. Yeah, no, that's a good one.
Good one. All right, well, thanks, everybody, for tuning in. All right, listen, we love you.
Love you.
People talk
Bye.
We're getting taco shells from the grocery store and ground beef from the grocery store.